Lance Hubmeier.
If you're going to go stick your head in the sand like that, get out of the sport.
Mike Coppinger.
It's creating a huge mess. It's absurd.
No, you're wrong. So
the only seems like a cash grab.
You need to turn up and you need to be on it.
We just started going at it.
You got to go eat.
The Pug and Cop Boxing Show on The Athletic.
Lance Pugmire and I are back with another episode of the Pug and Cop Boxing Show on The Athletic. And it was a massive news day yesterday between the Eddie Hearn, the Zone UK exclusive deal, Sky Sports out, and of course the Floyd Mayweather Logan Paul exhibition match now being set for June. So we're going to get into all that, plus my experience at the Triller fight between Jake Paul and Ben Askren. So let's get right into it now.
Mike, I wanted to ask you, I mean, you just come back from Atlanta where you were, you know, broadcasting the Triller fight with Jake Paul and Ben Askren. What was that like?
It was quite a wild experience, Lance. It started out with me watching the Black Keys standing next to UFC star Sugar Sean O'Malley when Pete Davidson walked over with a blunt in his mouth and a flute of champagne in his hands. I told Pete, I was like, hey man, I love King of Staten Island, which I did. I thought it was an awesome movie. And he points at this guy next to him. He goes, hey, this guy wrote the movie. And
no way.
And I was like, hey, that was a great choice of Bill Burr as the stepdad. You know, I mean, Bill Burr crushed it. So yeah, watched the Black Keys for a few songs, went over back to the set. I didn't get to do too much TV time. You know, we were running long and I probably only got 30 seconds maybe in on the actual broadcast. I did a lot in the preview, but I think probably the highlight was when I said that, when I spoke to Regis Progray, he told me if he, you know, had Yvonne Redcash hurt, even though he knows him well from their time at Churchill Boxing Club, if he had him hurt, he said, I'm going to quote, fuck him up. And Snoop Dogg goes, damn, this guy went from professional announcer to hood announcer real quick. So that was a highlight along with when they went to me, Oscar De La Hoya saying, show my fucking face more. So lots of highlights. I'll never forget it. And speaking of Redcash and Progray, who could forget Redcash rolling around on the ground for 10 minutes after not even being hit low and then going off on a stretcher? I mean, somehow that wasn't even the craziest thing of the night. But it was a wild experience. There was weed smoke in the air throughout the entire night. I don't think Snoop Dogg was ever not smoking a blunt. And I think maybe my favorite part of the night was just how smart Snoop Dogg is. I mean, obviously you have to be pretty smart and pretty special personality to get this far. But at the beginning of the night, before the broadcast even started, Lance, I went up to Snoop, you know, because it's his event partially. And I said, hey, thanks for having me on the broadcast. And he was like, let's get a motherfucking photo. I was like, all right,
wow,
it'd be great. Yeah, it's great because, like, obviously everyone wants a photo with Snoop, and he spared me having to ask. I thought that was smart. So I go to take the photo with him, and I have, you know, my right arm is around Snoop, my left arm is free, and I have a bottle of Dasani water, a full bottle of water in my left hand, and I dropped it because I was like, shit, I want to get it out of the shot quick, and I don't know how much time Snoop has. So it made a very loud sound, of course, and Snoop goes, man, what the hell was that sound? Am I being served with a warrant? I was like, man, this dude's on. This is why he's Snoop Dogg. So it was a fun night. And I think my initial takeaway is I know people are gonna scoff at this. I think Jake Paul, for being a 3-0 YouTuber, is a pretty decent fighter. Like, I've seen worse professional fighters before for sure. He did some nice subtle things. Like, he definitely has fundamentals, he's composed, he was throwing a little jab to the body and then the right over the head. I'm not saying he's a superstar fighter or anything. I'm just saying that he takes it seriously, clearly. He has real guys in his training camp, like Jaylen Love. He talks to guys, they'll tell him, hey, Jake Paul is a legit fighter. And when I say legit, I mean he takes it seriously. And there are probably guys, I mean, let's be real. Guys that are 3-0, 4-0 are usually fighting guys like Ben Askren anyway. And Ben Askren was bad. So I think Jake Paul is, if he really wants to do this for a long time, and who knows if he does, but all the things he has going on, he could maybe, I don't know what his ceiling is, but he's definitely not embarrassing. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Mike. I mean, to target a shot like that, like he landed on Askren, certainly that is something that is schooled. You know, that's something that comes from working hard in the gym and being able to learn exactly, you know, when that opening presents itself, how to deliver it. And, you know, I know where what everyone is saying about that. You know, he's lacking for, or he needs to find a real boxer to fight in his next match. You know, yes, I understand that, but you know, he's moving along at his own pace. And if his own pace is going to draw 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, Mike, I think he's doing pretty well. So, you know, look, well, let's just see where it goes with Jake Paul. But it's not like he's embarrassing the sport. He's the one who's succeeding. And it's upon, you know, the matchmakers at Triller and or Jake himself to select the types of personalities that it's going to continue to bring an audience. And if you can throw some of the real boxing matches on through there, like they did with Regis Prograis, even though Ivan Redkach, I was talking to someone who fought him previously, John Molina Jr., and he actually was making the point. He says what Redkach did in that fight is probably career suicide, you know, based on the faking and the acting and the requirement of a stretcher. But, you know, everything said and done, the ultimate takeaway of that evening was what Jake Paul did. And there was a lot of buzz and a lot of talk about that. And the guy has no apologies to make in my book. I mean, like I said, you know, there's going to be more bigger events ahead of him. And personally, I'm kind of interested to see how it plays out. But, you know, in watching the show, Mike, I had such obvious questions for you. I couldn't wait to talk to you when you got back, but I wanted to wait for the show. And my first is that everything did on the Triller broadcast did seem to be so improvised. Was there any script to really stick to, or was it kind of everyone kind of like on their own to do and say really what they wanted to as the time presented itself?
First off, I want to point out the numbers you're referring to on the pay-per-view buys that Jake Paul announced that himself. I don't have a number yet. At least I don't know if that's the right number.
Okay.
You know, I don't know, but that's the only, I don't have the number yet. I just want to point out for the listeners that that's the number that you're referring to. You're not wrong either. That's just the number Jake Paul is claiming. Just to make
right. And we usually know covering pay-per-views that usually the number comes out, if I'm not mistaken, around like Friday, you know, after fight with the fight itself. So, right.
Yeah. It just depends because, you know, now the digital numbers you have instantly, and then it's usually like DirecTV, which is such a small slice of the pie now and in demand the cable that you're waiting to get. But we should have the number soon. I mean, maybe it is the right number, but that's the number Jake is claiming. And look, just from my feel, it felt like a big event. I had a lot of people hit me up that don't watch boxing saying they watched. Because you know, this is definitely a different audience. My takeaway, though, Lance, on what you were saying, I found it crazy that people were trying to say that Ben Askren took a dive. I was actually sitting on the apron where he landed. I mean, he took a flush right hand. His face broke his fall. He was in bad shape. And he was telling the ref, I'm ready. I can continue. And they wouldn't let him go. So, look, if you want to say Ben Askren didn't train, that's one thing. But
yes.
He definitely was not a dive. Now, sorry, to answer your question, Lance. No, there was no script, really. I mean, they said just be yourself. They weren't trying to do a buttoned-up broadcast. I planned out to say that little quote from Regis the day before. When I did that, I didn't realize there was going to be so much cursing. But, you know, they just wanted a real, raw broadcast. I do think the Teofimo Lopez, George Kambosos broadcast will sound and feel a lot different, considering it's, you know, a serious – we're talking about a four-belt undisputed title fight between one of the best fighters in the world and Teofimo Lopez and a legit contender in Kambosos. And I can tell the listeners that Zerto Ramirez is going to be on the undercard in a real fight.
Great.
And a good fight.
Really?
It's a good matchup. I can't say the opponent yet, but because I was told off the record, but it's a good opponent. And we're going to have a top 10 heavyweight, a legit top 10 heavyweight on the undercard that Triller is going to have. So it's going to be a 10 fight card next time with a less musical act. It's going to be more about the fights. It's going to be different. Real deal Holyfield. Yeah. So already announced. And I think it's going to be a lot different, you know, in terms of everything. But my takeaway is for anyone complaining, you know, Jake Paul promoted the hell out of this fight. He made his own way there. You might not like it. It's definitely not for boxing purists, but it seems like it might be here to stay. Cause you know, we also have the news, Lance, that Floyd Mayweather is going to be doing an exhibition, not a real fight, but an exhibition with his brother, Logan Paul. And the date isn't clear right now. I was told June 5th, maybe, you know, now I see maybe June 6th is a possibility, a Sunday. I was also told that's possible. Regardless, it's coming soon. And Mayweather, I'm told, can't weigh more than 160 and Logan can't weigh more than 190. But I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest there, even though it is an exhibition, not a sanctioned fight. I'm just happy to hear that it seems like now that it might not be going the same day as Teofimo Lopez versus Kambosos, and that is going to be a Showtime pay-per-view.
Yeah, obviously, Mike, I think the questions that happened there is that we know, you know, these guys were talking about fighting originally in February. That did not work out, and now it moved to Showtime. Is that just because of the long running relationship between Mayweather and Showtime, and maybe Showtime looking at what the Jake Paul numbers are and saying like, we need to get into this business as well.
I certainly don't think it hurts. I mean,
yeah,
I think there's a lot of buzz around that, and you know, I think there's going to be a lot of interest for a long time now. We're going to see a lot of these, but I think the novelty will wear off at some point, Lance. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like at some point, Mike. I mean, I wanted to say to you during this show, it's like, what are we doing? What are we covering anymore? We really don't know, because like for this fight in particular, we can't really talk about who's going to win and why, right? A typical subject of our conversation. Now it's just basically like a show to where, you know, like, let's just sit back and see where the twists and turns of the event are. And I'm not making light of it because I know you love it, but it's almost becoming a little bit like WWE.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you're right. Although WWE, it's everything's more cohesive and all. I understand. Look, I'm sure people listening to the podcast are hardcore boxing fans, so that's probably not for you. And I get it. I'm a hardcore boxing fan. Lance, you're a hardcore boxing fan. Yeah. But
we're in a new world. We're in a new world.
We're in a new world. And speaking of real boxing, you know, we have Eddie Hearn. Big news there. I reported yesterday, Eddie Hearn and DAZN now are going to begin an exclusive partnership in the UK, where boxing is obviously a lot bigger. That's going to begin July 1st, that deal. And, you know, that will end Eddie's long-running tenure with Sky Sport. He's been with Sky Sport for, I think, at least a decade. That'll be gone. All his fighters like Conor Benn, Katie Taylor, Callum Smith, they'll all be moving over to DAZN in the UK. And obviously that's in addition to all the fighters that have been on DAZN worldwide already. But, you know, UK was exclusive to the Sky with Eddie, and now it's going to be DAZN. I think it's a big deal.
Absolutely, Mike. I mean, it has to do with DAZN, you know, going global. And yeah, I don't see it hurting boxing in the UK, or will it? I mean, could it? Sky Sports is probably available to more people.
Sky is available in way more homes for sure. But I think what's nice here for Eddie Hearn is that he has a vision, and he's going to be able to, I'm told, form a new broadcast team. You know, look at the presentation and the feel and the lighting. Sky Sports did look kind of dated, and now he's going to start from scratch with, you know, we saw how awesome the fight camp looked in his backyard. And you know, now we'll see what Eddie Hearn can do with a new broadcast team, new lighting, new everything. He gets to start from scratch. That's probably really nice for him.
Yeah, no, it's a huge move. And, you know, I saw in your story, Mike, and great job on both of these breaking news stories, but I saw in your story, you also made it very clear as to how the Joshua Fury fight will be televised. Can you tell the listeners that? Can you explain that to them?
Good point, Lance. Anthony Joshua and Dillian White are not included in that DAZN UK deal. That doesn't mean Joshua and White aren't going to fight in DAZN. White very well could this summer. Joshua could in the future. It's just that Dillian White is on a fight-by-fight with Matchroom, and so it'll have to be negotiated, obviously. Doesn't mean he won't be on there, which means that it's not automatic. And then Joshua has one fight left with Eddie Hearn. Sure he'll renew. They have a great relationship, but I am told that Fury-Joshua fight, whenever it does get finalized, and it is not finalized yet, it would be a Sky Sport and BT collaboration on the pay-per-view in the UK. First time ever. ESPN Plus pay-per-view in the US, which I think we've said before on this podcast, and then DAZN elsewhere worldwide.
Got it.
And it is going to be in Saudi Arabia. It's just a matter of when now and getting it done, but still some time to go there to get this done. Not quite there yet.
It's very interesting, Mike, because we hear all the time, you know, especially here in the US, that with different broadcasters and different promoters involved, just how difficult it is to get these fights done. But you know what? You know, what a miracle in the biggest fight of all, they found a way to get it done. And I think that's that should be the precedent as we're sitting here talking about how these novelty fights are taking away viewership. You know, I think it behooves the powers that be in the sport to try to break bread and sit down and find a way to get these fights to take place because look, I mean, the consumer is telling you what they want to see. They want to see interesting, compelling fights. And, you know, more so than ever, I think boxing needs to figure out its way forward to allow this to happen. And instead of, you know, leaning on like past acrimony and finding excuses, you know, this is a window of opportunity now for people to work together and get things done, like, you know, Eddie Hearn, Bob Arum, and everyone else did to make this fight work.
Yeah, Lance, you know, I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens with Sky Sports now, if Sky Sports stays in boxing. I think they will, and I hope they will. I was told maybe they would stay in boxing on an a la carte basis like HBO. I think that would be nice for the UK viewers. But speaking of Arum, Lance, and I know I'm sure he's going to go for that Sky deal as well. He has a real star in the making in Edgar Berlanga. 16 fights, 16 first round knockouts. He was going by the chosen one. We saw it on the sign. He got for Little Wayne. But now I think he's the fucking monster. Edgar, thank you for joining us. You're fighting Damon Nicholson this Saturday on ESPN in Florida. And of course, we know you're going to be gunning for that first round knockout again, right?
Say it again.
I said, of course, we know you're going to be once again gunning for that first round knockout, right?
Say that again. I was just. you know.
All right, second round, fine.
Nah, you know, if it goes past the first round, it is what it is, man. We prepared to go 12 rounds, like I always say. We work so hard in the gym, you know, like we always do. Not just for this fight. Every fight we work hard, because every fight for me is a championship fight. You know, one L under my belt, and for me, it's over. I don't want no L's in my on my record, in my life. So, you know, we work extremely hard, and I'm ready for this Saturday.
Yeah, what I loved about, you know, all your fights, particularly the last couple, is that it's obvious to me when I'm watching you that you know how big the streak is, this first round knockout streak. And when you were fighting on that Teofimo Lopez Lomachenko undercard, you went so hard for it against Lionel Bellows. You were like, from the opening bell, you were pushing hard, throwing big shots, and it's almost like you punch through the guard now. I see guys, they think they can block your shots. You punch right through it. Who can take your power? Is there somebody out there?
Possibly. You know, I feel like, you know, this is boxing, man, and I know eventually I'll probably walk into a guy that's going to – I'm going to hit him with my strongest shot, and he's going to look at me and smile. But, like, me, my team – let's see if he could take that for another four rounds, that same shot. A lot of people won't be able to take it. But you know, right now, you know, we focus in on something bigger. You know, I want to get the job done this Saturday, and I want to continue to win in remarkable fashion and just continue to grow.
We've talked about it before, Edgar. I mean, obviously I think the big questions that a lot of people have is how are you going to fare after the first round, but you obviously look in tremendous shape. Is that kind of what's in your mind as you're training? Is that, look, if it goes past the first round, I'm going to be able to prove that my power will last and sustain itself.
Yeah, you know, that's what we always train for in the gym. You know, every time, you know, I'm training with Andre Rozier or Dave Holnick, my strength and conditioning coach, one of the best out there, you know, They take me to that level, man. They put me to that point where I feel like I'm about to die, you know, like in training, just because of we push to that limit where we know that. And they always tell me, listen, Edgar, you know that if we got to go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds, you know, there's a lot of doubters out there that's going to be doubting you. And they trying to see if you could last, you know, so you got to always be prepared and make sure that your conditioning is up to par.
Yeah, I mean, your opponent, Damon Nicholson, I was looking up his record. The guy's 23-3-1. He has 2 knockout losses, one of which was to, you know, the former title challenger, Jesse Hart. But he also went the distance with a guy, Steve Rolls, who fought Gennady Golovkin previously. So this guy's a credible opponent. How badly, how fiercely, you know, just for maybe PR sake, do you chase that first round knockout in this bout?
You know, the fights is going to get tougher and tougher, and we all know that. So, like I said, going back to the other question you said, you know, we prepare, you know, we prepare for everything around the board, whether or not if I get him on the first round or I get him on the second or third round, but I will, he's not going on an eight with me, or he's not going to the eighth round with me at all. I know that for a fact, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, I don't care that he's 23 and three with 20 knockouts, you know, because like I said, when you're in there with me, it's a different story.
Yeah. And I think what's good about Nicholson is that you fight a guy that has real power, probably the most power you've faced so far. And you hear people say, you know what everyone's saying, oh, we don't know Berlanga this, we don't know that, since you get all these first round knockouts. And we also know that the top ranked matchmakers want to see you get rounds, but also this first round knockout streak is taking on a life of its own. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's one of the biggest things in boxing, yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, like, it's
a big fucking deal. Like, when you talk about, you hear people going around, hey, you know that kid Berlanga, he has 16 first round knockouts. So how do you balance wanting to get the knockout in the first round with also wanting to maybe get some development in there, some rounds in, show people what you can do?
Yeah, I mean, if it goes past the first, you know, if I come out, you know, and there's a good competitive first round or whatnot, and, you know, he takes my best shot, then we ready to go into the second round, you know. But it's just a game plan that we following. And like I said, you know, if I hurt him, you know, if he opens up on me, which I know he will, he's going to try to open up to test me. And, you know, if I connect, I know he's not going to like it at all. I know he's not going to like it. You know, he's been touched numerous times. I seen a couple of his fights, and he's gotten touched already, you know. So for me, it's like none of these guys hit like I do. And, you know, for me, when I touch him, I know it's going to be a different story.
Yeah, it's funny, right, because you're sort of a boxing enigma. Like, we know that you have, like, obviously the power is real. Obviously you have a great personality that could transform you into a star. But none of us have seen, like, your jab or your defense or your chin because you haven't had to show it. Obviously you know what you could do from sparring. What are people going to find out about you once you do go those rounds?
They're going to just know that I'm a tremendous fighter and a tremendous boxer. You know, I'm a boxer puncher. Before I became a puncher, I was a boxer. So I just transitioned the punching power into my boxing skill. Like, you get what I said? I was a boxer. Didn't really punch in the amateurs growing up. I grew into my man body, and I just wound up getting this tremendous power that came in, and I just incorporated both the boxing and the power, and I became a boxer puncher. So, and that's what we practice in the gym, you know, is working on my skill, working on my defense, working on my leg movement, making sure that we give it angles, that we give in the right angles, and shooting off that.
When was it that you discovered that, you know, the punching was so sensational that you need to pursue that as your identity?
You know, I could say probably like my first professional fight, and then preparing for that, you know, I started knocking people out in the gym, and, you know, just them stopping the sparring or whatever. So then I was just like, damn. And then my first fight came, I barely touched the dude. I touched him on the chin, and I felt like I didn't even get off a good shot. And he just crumbled on the floor, and I was like, wait, hold on. I was like, man, I woke up, you know. Second fight, the same thing. It was like 40 seconds, threw a right hand, left hook, guy was on the floor. I was like, what? Third fight, the same thing. Touched him, boom, he went out. Fifth fight in New York, that knockout went viral. You know, his head almost hit the guy's head almost hit the bell.
Oh, my God.
He almost landed.
Ding, ding.
That's when I was like, oh, nah, yeah, my power was different. Like, this is different.
That's so cool. I mean, look, let's be honest. We know that there's major promotional projects in play for you, given, like Mike said, you know, the your knockout streak taking on a life of its own. I understood that maybe because of some COVID restrictions that there may be some difficulties in getting you to MSG for Puerto Rican weekend in June. Is that, what can you tell us about that? And is there going to be like a turn in the road where you're going to be heading somewhere else for that around that time to fight?
Yeah, you know, if June, bro, which I don't think is gonna happen, probably in New York, you know, June 12th, you know, I got my baby born June 14th, so, you know,
wow, congrats.
If it doesn't happen in MSG, then, you know, I'm looking to fight like in July or something. You know, I got the baby coming, and it's a lot of things. I wanted to do the June fight in New York because everything just made sense. But you know, I would like to just, you know, focus on my baby coming June 14th, and then, you know, we could talk about a possible date in July. So,
yeah, and now Top Rank has, I believe it's a 4-fight deal with Virgin Hotels. They're going to be doing the Josh Taylor Jose Ramirez fight May 22nd at Virgin Hotels, which is the former Hard Rock, and then that June 12th card that you, Edgar, were originally going to be on in New York is now going to be Shakur Stevenson, Jeremiah Nakathila. That's going to be in Vegas too. So, but look, I think that there's some big fights coming for you down the road, and I know you've been pushing for them even now. I know Steve Nelson, who's with Brian Bomack and McIntyre and Terrence Crawford. That was the fight you wanted, but you know, I think the fight was too expensive or whatever. And then Gabe Rosado is the fight you're looking at too. I mean, what do you think is going to be the big fight? Not the big fight, but the first like fight where they're like, all right, this is definitely going past one round. Who do you see that being?
You know, a fight with Steve Nelson would be cool. You know, and Gabe Rosado. You know, I think that would be a tremendous fight. You know, because he's tough. He's fought a lot of he fought the best. And you know, that's the type of guy that could probably, you know, give me rounds and stand in and dig with me. But like a guy like that, man, I need like a tough, rugged dude that's been at that level, sort of like him. Or even if it's him, you know, we could get him at the end of the year. That'll be dope.
Yeah, and we've seen that you're friends with a lot of like famous people. I would love to know how you've done it so fast. I mean, I think what Tracy Morgan, Fat Joe, Lil Wayne. How did you come into such close contact with all these guys? You have like super fans.
Yeah. It's crazy. You know, just you know, I got introduced with Tracy Morgan to a friend of mine that's like, you know, big in the industry. His name is Sean Pecas. He works with CAA and all this stuff. So he introduced me to Tracy. You know, the Fat Joe thing came about because you know, my dad's people from Puerto Rico, and you know, it was just somebody knowing somebody, and it was just all about connecting the dots, and that's what we did. You know, we just connected it, and we wound up getting together in New York. We had lunch, and from there it was just, you know, everything is just history now. And then, you know, with Lil Wayne after the October fight, he had tweeted out, or I think it was in December, he had tweeted out that he wanted that cutout box. I mean, and I didn't really pay no mind to it. I was like, that's what's up. You know, he's tweeting me or whatever. And I didn't come to realize, like, damn, it's Lil Wayne. You know, like, that's Lil Wayne tweeting about me. I'm like, and I watched him all my life growing up. And his boy wound up hitting me up, like, yo, you know, bro wants to talk to you and stuff. Send me a number. So I was like, oh. So I sent him my number, and he FaceTimes me with a blunt like this big. Like, this like, yo, what's up, man? And I guess he was in his tour bus or something. And he was just talking to me about a lot of things, you know, just about life and, you know, me coming up and, you know, what is going to be like being at that level. And you know, just a lot of things, man, that he was telling me.
Yeah, I think I remember once reading that Lil Wayne employs like a professional, like blunt or joint roller on his staff, but just travels with him. I was like, man, that's like living the dream there.
Yeah.
But when are we going to see one of these guys walk you out to the ring?
Probably no time soon. You know, I want everything to just, you know, to clear out and, you know, hopefully this year, and we can make something happen.
You know, it's interesting, Edgar. I mean, here we are like less than a week after Jake Paul just fought and drew, you know, about 1.5 million pay-per-view buys in basically his third pro fight. You, if anyone, I think understand what a big personality can bring to boxing. I mean, you're seeing it with your generation really kind of embracing this type of, you know, attitude and mentality. Is there anything that you take away from what you're seeing from Jake Paul that you will embrace and bring to the sport on the real level?
Yeah, you know, he just brought in something totally different. You know, he's a YouTuber that had millions and millions of followers on that. And, you know, he just probably decided, yo, I want to be a boxer. And he just transitioned those type of YouTuber fans that he had. He transitioned them into boxing. You know, and then, you know, obviously he has that it seems like he has the it factor. You know, he comes out with, you know, he got the swag, he got the chains, he got this. And a lot of fighters, you know, hating on him, you know, and I get it. You know, yeah. A lot of fighters fought their whole lives, and you got a guy like a YouTube guy like that that's big, and he comes and he's making all these millions of dollars, man. But, you know, you just got to understand and you got to respect it at the end of the day. You know, I respect Jake Paul. You know, he's a YouTuber making his way into boxing. He's changing the game, you know, for entertainment. And, you know, it's nothing to say bad about him. You know, at the end of the day, you got to respect guys that going in that ring because it's dangerous and you can get hurt.
Now, Edgar, do you have a favorite knockout so far? Is it maybe the bell?
Yeah, I think it's that one. That one was one of my favorite ones because that one went viral. But also the Eric Moon fight in July, my first fight since from the pandemic. You know, when I pulled his hand down, I shot a right hook.
Yeah,
flat him out. So those are the two fights, my favorite fights. You know.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because when I was watching that Eric Moon fight, that's when I thought to myself, okay, Berlanga is more than just a puncher. Like that was a pretty advanced move, using your hands to like remove his guard.
Yeah, but people don't. You see, like you're a boxing fanatic. You know, you love boxing. So people like you understand it. Andre Ward understands. You know, it's little things that you got to see in that first round. That you know, like, okay, this guy has some type of and Timothy Bradley too. Some type of you know, some type of technique. And you got to be a tech, like Timothy Bradley said. You got to be a technician to do what I do. You got to be a technician, man. It's not easy to knock people out in the first round or be precise with your punches and get them out quick. You know, quicker than expected. A lot of people just doubt me on that, man, and they don't understand. Listen, yo, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Edgar, before we let you go, one last question from me. Like we said earlier at the top of the interview, you were going by the chosen one. We know that you've now tell everyone that you're a fucking monster. What's your official moniker? Like when you get in the ring on Saturday, are they going to call you Edgar the Monster Berlanga? What is it?
I want them to say Edgar the Chosen One. Oh, Edgar Berlanga. They're going to say Edgar the Chosen One, Berlanga, a.k.a. the Monster.
Wow, you're going Money Mayweather style here. When Mayweather would go, Pretty Boy Floyd, a.k.a. Money Mayweather. That's big time.
So now, you know, we're just transitioning it now, you know. I'm the new Floyd in here, you heard?
All right, well, hey, we really, really appreciate your time. We know you're busy. Right. Can't wait for Saturday when you're going to be going for that 17th straight first-round knockout against Damon Nicholson on ESPN. This is Edgar Berlanga. Thanks again.
Thank you, Edgar.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Lance, what do you think? Putting you on the spot. Does the streak continue?
I say the streak continues for this fight and this fight only. This is going to be the end of the streak. It's going to be the 17th and final consecutive first-round knockout by Edgar Berlanga. By all accounts, this guy is ripped and ready in the gym, but I think after this they're going to get him that big fight or a bigger fight that he deserves and wants, and at that point he will have to go past the first round. But look, as he said, I believe he's ready to do so, Mike. I mean, this is an impressive individual who can connect with the younger generation of fight fans, and you know, being from the East Coast and being you know, having the Puerto Rican blood in him, I'm excited about this kid. I really think it's been a pleasant surprise to see how he's emerged. And like he said in the conversation with us, you know, it really kind of came from nowhere. He considered himself a boxer first, then all of a sudden, you know, this power punching arose, and it's been such a tremendous thing to see. And like you said, it's taken on a life of its own. I'm sure you feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, the streak is massive for him. You know, it's he has Lil Wayne cut out. I mean, how cool? I mean, sorry, Lil Wayne has a cutout of him. How cool is that? So obviously, we like Berlanga. He's great to deal with. He's great for sport, I think. And we'll see if he can fulfill his potential. But I also don't want to forget the main event on Saturday, featherweight title fight, Emmanuel Navarrete against Christopher Pitufo Diaz. I think Pitufo Diaz is about I want to say Navarrete is probably like minus 900, I think, for BetMGM. I'm not positive. But I think Pitufo Diaz is a real live dog in there. I mean, Navarrete throws a lot of punches, big guy, but I don't think he's unbeatable by any means. And Diaz has looked better recently, especially against Sanchez. So I think that's a pretty intriguing main event. You know, I don't think it's the kind of fights that is going to really move the needle, but I think it should be a fun fight.
Absolutely, Mike. And I think, you know, we talked about it a couple shows ago. It's been a great year so far for Mexican fighters with Canelo Alvarez, Juan Francisco Estrada, Oscar Valdez. And I think Emmanuel Navarrete wants to continue that momentum in this fight. He's got an opportunity to retain this belt and, you know, continue to show himself as a significant power puncher in his own right. So, look, if you like knockouts, I would definitely check out these fights on ESPN coming up this weekend.
Yep. So that'll be this Saturday on ESPN, Emmanuel Navarrete against Christopher Pitufo Diaz, and then the Monster, a.k.a. the Chosen One, as he said, Edgar Berlanga against Damon Nicholson. And we want to thank Berlanga again for giving us some time. It's a busy week for him. And if you want to follow him on social media, you could do so on Instagram at Real Edgar Berlanga and on Twitter at Edgar Berlanga Jr. Thanks, everyone, again. We'll see you next time.